Hello and welcome to episode 77 of the Strength Through Vulnerability podcast. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? It's so good to be back with you all. This week, I'm bringing to you an interview with a man named Johnny Crowder. Johnny is the man. He's so cool. You know, he's a survivor of abuse and attempted suicide, which helps relate him to so many people right off the bat. He's also a rocker. Like, he's the first rock star we've had on the show. I hope this is a trend because that's super cool. He's the lead singer of a band called Prison. He's also an entrepreneur. He is the founder, the creator of Cope Notes, which perhaps you've heard of before. And if not, you'll hear a lot more about what Cope Notes is in this interview. And on top of all those things, Johnny has his own challenges with mental health, from being diagnosed with OCD, schizophrenia, and a ton of other things. I think he jokes about how he's basically diagnosed with everything. So he's got a full story. He's got an incredible story, and he's only like 28 years old, I think. So he's a young dude who's been through a lot, and he does a lot of good stuff. So without further ado, let's get into this interview. Johnny Crowder, what is going on, man?
I am sitting here trying to figure out how to say your last name, actually. Dahlberg?
Very close. Dahlborg.
Dahlborg. Son of a gun. D-A-H-L. I knew it wasn't Dahl. Dahlborg.
Dahlborg. There you go, man. It was super close.
I don't mean to do this to you. You probably get it all the time. Do you know the show Big Bad Beetleborgs?
No, I don't, actually.
It is the worst. If you like terrible acting and like cheesy 90s nonsense, like the shows that would be on TV when we were growing up, Saturday mornings that were just like complete chaos. Mm-hmm. It's a show called Beetleborgs or Big Bad Beetleborgs. I can't remember. It's on Netflix and it is the worst thing I've ever seen. Beetleborg is like the final form of Dahlborg. Like if you were to grow horns and seven more legs, you would be a Beetleborg.
I love that. All right, I'm writing that down. I gotta check that out. That's hilarious. Oh,
it sucks. I love like B movies and stuff like that. So it's a treat for me, but it's a lot. Like you can hardly watch one episode without pausing it and being like, I need a break from this.
That's incredible. I love it. Man, I've been looking forward to our conversation for a really long time. It's been a couple months. And I mean, we've already started off great. If we're talking about Big Bad Beetleborgs, we're going in the right direction.
Heck yes.
You know, man, you do so many things and at a very high level. You know, if somebody just goes to your Instagram, for example, you're an entrepreneur running this thing called Cope Notes. You're also a rocker. Like I was wondering today when I was thinking about how I wanted to start off this show, I was in the shower because that's where the best thoughts happen. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if Johnny is like introducing himself to somebody and somebody asks him like, what do you do? Or like, how do you categorize yourself? What label do you use? Even though labels aren't always the best, what would you say to somebody? How do you describe what you do and what you're about?
A lot of times I just say I work in mental health and music. And that's kind of like a soft, if someone's like, ooh, tell me more, then I will. But if someone's like, ugh, no thanks to either of those, I'm like, I totally get it. Don't worry about it.
I love it. That really simplifies it. That's awesome. I want to talk a bit more about each of those areas actually, because, you know, what I think is so cool is that, you know, I want to dive more into Cope Notes and talk about what that is for all the people who maybe haven't heard of it yet. But one thing that I noticed just by going on your Instagram page, and I think on your band's page too, you tend to mesh a lot of mental health topics into your music. And one thing I think is really dope, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you, I think, write like a different word on your chest for every single concert that you guys do. And there's like meaning behind it. I want to hear more about this.
Yeah. So the thought behind it, well, first of all, for a long time, I would keep my mental health stuff and my music stuff separate, and it just became impossible to be two different people. So I was like, screw it. You know, music and mental health, I don't know how to separate them anymore. So they're going to intertwine. And with Prison, one thing that I wanted to do So I'm in a band called Prison now, just so listeners know, I'm not like in a prison. My band is called Prison, and I used to be in a band called Dark Sermon. So I've been touring for ever, since before I had underarm hair. And honestly, after, you know, the first few years of touring, you're like on fire. You're like, this is so cool. I'm a rock star. And then a couple years in and it becomes routine and you start taking it for granted and every night feels the same. And when I started with Prison, so Dark Sermon broke up. And when I started with Prison, I was like, I don't want that to happen to me again. Like, I don't want to take this for granted and just allow this to feel like routine and not special. Like I'm living a dream. I need to be present enough to experience it. So what I started doing was writing a different word on my chest with a big fat Sharpie every single night to hold me accountable to make every show different. Like if I'm playing in Milwaukee one night and it's the first week of tour, they shouldn't get a better show than someone in San Diego because they're the seventh week of tour. But they shouldn't get the exact same show either. That's what makes, you know, if it was the exact same show, they could just listen to a CD. But because it's live, I want it to feel special and unique and different. So every single night I put a different word on my chest, whether it's related to something going on in current events or something specific to that city or something going on in the lives of one of my band members. And I will talk about that on stage for a minute or two between songs. And it just makes sure that you don't get so rehearsed as a musician that every crowd looks the same. Like, think about it. Every venue is different. Every city is different. Every single person in every crowd is different. So you can't just like lump everybody in as the same person and expect them to respond in a way that fulfills you. Like, you can't do that to people.
Yeah. Wow. That is so cool. I love how thoughtful that is. And just makes me think about how, like, literally the best part, and you actually alluded to this, the best part about a concert is when you feel like you're kind of in the scene with them, when they're reacting to the crowd, just like the crowd is reacting to the artist, right? And you putting that word that's got a story or a message behind it or on your chest just makes me think of this idea of strength through vulnerability and the role vulnerability plays in true connection. And what is it that the fans want? They want to connect with you. So you doing that, I feel like just takes that to a whole nother level.
Dude, I will say that in Dark Sermon, I was trying to be the metal guy. Like, I had the Doc Martens and I had the big metal vest and the long hair, and we had like candles and animal bones and we burned sage, and it was like this whole cool super metal thing. But in Prison, I was like, that's too much work to do all that. Like, I'm going to be myself. I'm going to wear leggings with flowers on them. I'm going to dye my hair pink. I'm going to dance around in a circle and jump up and down and laugh and smile on stage. And seeing the difference in crowd reaction blows my mind. It's like, if only people knew that the more themselves they are, the more people will like them. You don't even understand that the character you're trying to be for other people is someone that they don't like half as much as they would actually like the real you if you ever let them see it.
Man, that is so good. That is so good. I've heard something similar to that lately quite often. Are you on the new app out there called Clubhouse? Have you heard of that?
Someone just told me about it and then berated me for like 15 minutes because I didn't use it. So that's my only experience so far, is someone going, are you serious? You're not. I'm not even on Twitter. I'm like a late adopter.
Fair game, man. Well, I find myself, you know, a lot... the bigger rooms is what they call them in there. They're often talking about like social media marketing and stuff. And you have some people who like really know their stuff in there. Also some people who are kind of faking it. But the ones who know their stuff, their biggest piece of advice is literally be you. Show up and be you on social media, or to your point, at concerts, at your events, because that's what people are going to connect with the most. So it's so true.
It's just a relief to know that it's almost like the less work you do, the more yourself you are. And you're like, oh, well, then why wouldn't I just do the least amount of work as possible all the time? Like, I put so much effort into trying to be a metal frontman.
Mm.
And I didn't realize that nobody at the shows really wanted that. They expected it.
Mm-hmm.
But expecting something doesn't mean you want it.
Mm. Amen. Yeah, that's so good, man. Wow. I love that. I think it's a really important message that we don't need to just have separate identities for whatever it is that we're doing. We can show up fully as ourselves, whether we're rocking out, whether we're, you know, an entrepreneur running this Cope Notes business or just showing up at family gatherings, whatever it is, we can and should show up totally authentically.
I think the way I described it to someone the other day was like, imagine if every time if someone sends you a text and they're like, hey, what are you doing on Thursday? Mm. Imagine if you had to put on a costume for a character, and then you had to put on a ton of makeup, and then you had to take voice acting, and then you had to make your lighting right, and then, you know, rent out a theater to text back, nothing, what's up? Like, it's so much work for such a small thing. And it's difficult to explain to people, like, you might be doing that right now. You might be doing that much work to be somebody else for that little exchange. And it's costing you a ton, and it's not giving the other person anything more than if you were to just do away with the costume, do away with the makeup and lighting and theater, and just give them an honest answer. Saves you money. And the other person's response is not going to be that much better if they think you are playing a character.
Man, it's so good. And it's so true. And I would love to hear why you think we do that. Why do you think we put on different masks for other people when showing up as ourselves is the thing that works best?
We don't like ourselves, dude.
Think
about it. If we actually thought we were good enough, then why would we pretend to be anybody else? Like, it comes from us not actually liking ourselves. And we think, well, why don't I act like someone that my friend would like? So we're doing it out of this service to the people that we love. We're like, well, why don't I make things easier on them and be someone that I think they would like? But as a result, we tax ourselves and we become someone that our friends don't like. It's kind of like when someone says, like when a doctor is talking to you about medication, and it's like, you know, this is a cough steroid, and it could cause chronic coughing. And you're like, what are you talking about? Like, it could cause the thing that it's trying to prevent. And they're like, yeah, medicine is crazy like that. That's kind of what happens when we pretend to be somebody else. We think it's going to make someone feel more comfortable or happier, and it has the opposite effect.
Well, that's so much wisdom in that, man. That was awesome. And it makes me think, what for you, going from that first band that you mentioned, unfortunately, I forget what the name was of the band, but then going to Prison, the band. What is the name of your current band again? Is it Prison Live, Prison Lives?
It's just Prison.
Oh, it's just Prison.
So okay. Our Instagram is Prison Lives.
That's okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Cool. All right. So for you, was there like a really deep shift in Johnny Crowder as a person from one band to the next, in the sense of, was there healing, like self-healing that happened for when you got to be in Prison? I'm trying to articulate this well, where you were able to take all parts of you and bring that to the stage instead of trying to be something else. Was there like healing or something that happened that allowed you to show up that way?
Two things come to mind. Okay. So the first thing was when Dark Sermon broke up, I had to figure out who I was, which sounds like really vacuous and deep, but I mean, literally, I didn't know who I was. I was like 24 years old. I the only way I knew myself was the vocalist of Dark Sermon. That was my whole persona. Like, there was nothing else to me. I never developed any other passions or skills because I was so focused on the band that I didn't allow myself to be a human outside of it. So when the band broke up, I had a legit existential crisis. I'm like, who the heck am I? What do I like to do? Who are my friends? Like, I had to rediscover myself in my early 20s. And then the second thing that comes to mind is the fact that I was tired. Mm. I was so tired. If you build a band from scratch, you know how difficult it is. You play show after show after show after show after show in front of nobody, making no money, and you're tired and you're sore and you're stinky and you're hungry and you're sleeping in a van every night, you're freezing cold or soaking in sweat, and it is a disgusting existence for years until somebody finally gives you a chance. And going from local to finally touring and then breaking up and thinking, oh my Lord, I have to start over. I have to do that again. Those first however many years where no one takes you seriously and nobody cares. And I was so tired that I couldn't muster up the energy to be that metal person again. I'm like, if I'm doing this again, I'm giving it 100%, only now I have like 60% of the capacity that I did when I started the other band. So it was just, part of it was the existential crisis, trying to figure out who I was. But the other part was fatigue.
Yeah, it makes so much sense. That's it's so real. And I can only, you know, I haven't built a band up, but you presented that so well. I can almost put myself in your shoes and imagine how defeating that would be after all that grind and grind and grind and grind to think that, shoot, if I really want to make this happen, I got to do it again. What? That's huge.
And think about this too. While you're doing that, your friends are getting married, they're buying houses, they're getting degrees, they're getting promotions, they're starting families. And you're like, you know, you see them every once in a while. They're like, what's up with you? Still living in a van and playing in stinky venues? And you're like, yeah, for sure. 100%. Like, that is still my life. And you look at their life and there's so much change, there's so much growth. Mm. And you're like, wow, you got promoted to, wow, that's crazy. And oh, you know, you got a new car and you went to Vegas. And it's like, wow, I guess I still am just playing concerts. Mm. And you get in your own head, like you lose the comparison game mentally. Mm. And I think after experiencing that for so long, I thought, this is my last stab at music. And I don't want to go out. I don't want my music career to end without ever having a chance to be myself on stage.
Man, that's so good. I love that. And so when you were in the first band, which, my gosh, is it Dark Sermon you said is the name of it?
Mm-hmm.
Dark Sermon. All right, nice. I remembered it. When you were in Dark Sermon, had Cope Notes been a thing yet, or did that come after that band broke up?
No. So I started something. So in Dark Sermon, I was doing like peer support stuff, but only at home. Mm-hmm. I wasn't okay. really doing anything on tour. And because I started doing peer support and public advocacy and stuff in 2011. So that was like during Dark Sermon. But I didn't start Cope Notes until about 3 years ago.
Okay.
And that was while I was on tour with Prison. But before that, I ran something very few people will know this. Maybe like 10,000 people in the entire universe even know that I ran something called Not a Therapist, which was a peer support resource that I didn't even know was the beta version of Cope Notes. So I started Not a Therapist to be this peer support platform that I just couldn't sustain. It like couldn't scale. Like once you got past a certain number of people using it, it broke. So Cope Notes was my next attempt. And then Cope Notes was the one that stuck. So I started Not a Therapist on tour with Prison. And then I started Cope Notes on tour with Prison.
Nice, man. Nice. Yeah. So two major entrepreneurial ventures while being with Prison.
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson that I've learned so far through Prison is the fact that if you don't go for it, you for sure will not achieve whatever's like tugging at your heartstrings. There were a lot of times in Dark Sermon where I thought, oh, I'm passionate about that, but I should really focus. I should really just do the one thing. And it's like, who says, I'm not saying do a million things, but I'm saying if something keeps you up at night, if you have a burning passion for something, a desire to build something, don't ignore it. I ignored it for years. And it seems ridiculous looking back now. Like prison taught me to take chances.
That's so good. And a message that I myself and so many people, if not every single person listening, needs to hear. You know, I was listening to this other podcast the other day, and they were talking about how a really transformational conversation they had had, this person had had one time, was with a group of, or just a couple 80-year-old guys. He used to be their waiter every single weekend. And then one day they called him over and they're like, hey, we want to give you something. And the guy was like, okay, sure. What? And they're like, we want to tell you all the things that you should be doing right now when you're in your 20s, all the things that we wish we did. And it was a really cool episode. And just, there's so much wisdom in that. If you talk to one of the things they said as a takeaway was talk to somebody who's older than you, whether it's one generation or two generations older than you, ask them what they wish they had did when they were younger, when they were your age. And that can help you to see like, shoot, you got to take action now, to your point.
Yeah. One thing I think of too, in the sense of urgency, like a lot of people think, well, why don't I live that dream later? Why don't I try to pursue that or build that or flesh out that idea later? Two things. Number one, not to be morbid, but you could die tomorrow. That's always, everybody knows that. Like you could wait and say, well, I'll be happy when I'm 39. And then you have an aneurysm when you're 29. And you're like, well, dang it, I put off everything I wanted to do. Yeah. But that's something logical. Everybody already knows that that could happen. I want to bring up something that's maybe not as obvious to people, which is that there are other people depending on your idea that you don't know, and they don't know you, but they're depending on it. Like, think of this. Cope Notes, for example, we've texted thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And some people are still alive because of a text message that we sent them. They checked into rehab. They called the police. They, you know, some huge thing happened in their life where their marriage was changed or they, you know, whatever. If you wait to start your idea, those are the people who suffer, not you. You can wait. You have the luxury of waiting. No big deal. But the people who will come to depend on your idea, those are the ones who suffer. Those are the ones who go to turn to something or someone for inspiration or support or motivation, encouragement, whatever it is. And if you don't write that song, it won't be there for that person. You know, if you don't write that book, if you don't start that podcast or whatever your creative thing is, if you wait, you won't suffer. They will.
Wow, that is powerful. That's really powerful and is a really good reframe. And also an awesome segue to talk about what Cope Notes even is. Do you mind describing what it is, man, to all the people who maybe don't know yet?
Yeah, buddy. If you're not familiar with Cope Notes, welcome to the team. Basically, we use daily text messages to improve mental and emotional health. So another sentence about it, that's Cope Notes in a sentence. A second sentence about it is that we send these randomly timed text messages to your phone that are written by peers with lived experience. They are approved by mental health professionals, and they're designed to interrupt negative thought patterns and provide a catalyst for positive thought so that over time your brain learns to think in healthier patterns without you having to spend 30 minutes or an hour a day or once a week on something. It's like a tiny drip approach. Minute here, minute there, and collectively over time, your brain physically starts to rewire itself to think in healthier thought patterns. It's borderline magic.
I love it, man. It's so cool. And it gets at the whole idea, the reality of neuroplasticity, right? That's a little beyond my knowledge, but I understand that neuroplasticity is essentially we can rewire how our brain operates. And for a long time, I think they believed that you couldn't after like a certain age or a certain level of development. But we've found, well, with things like Cope Notes, that we actually can change how our brain processes things. So cool.
Yeah. I mean, if you can learn to ride a bike, if you can learn to paint, if you can learn to cook, you can certainly learn to think healthier thoughts. And that's our, it literally says right at the top of our website, think healthier thoughts. And I had to build a tool like this because my entire life, the most difficult thing to do for me from day one of my life was to be positive. For me to look at a situation, you know, if it was raining, I go, ugh, can't believe it's friggin' raining. Give me a break. And then the next day it's sunny. I'm like, oh, the sun is so bright. I can't, oh my Lord, what is the deal? This sucks. Like, I was so naturally spiteful and negative, and it wasn't on purpose. It wasn't like I set out to be negative in the morning. It was that my brain had learned over time to think in negative thought patterns, and I would get stuck in them. I would be critical of myself, critical of other people. I would be cynical about the future, very doubtful in my own abilities. And it was just like my brain learned to be negative, it can learn to be positive.
Man, it's so good. I love it. And, you know, it has me thinking, one thing that I wanted to talk to you about was, I remember, so you're on the Mental Health News Radio network of podcasts, which is awesome, with Kristen Walker, who's a freaking angel on earth. She's incredible. And I forget if she was interviewing you or if she came on your show and you were interviewing her, but you opened up about how you have OCD, and I also have OCD. And so naturally I wanted to hear more about your experience with that. And I really want to hear, in the lens of, you know, you struggled to be positive when you were younger and perhaps even still today, do you think that your OCD played a role in that? Because I know for me, it can really latch on to those negative thought patterns, and it can be really hard to break free of those because of the OCD.
So yeah, I want to touch on this. I think a common misunderstanding about OCD is that we leave half of it out of the equation culturally. So when we think of someone who has OCD, we think they're moving stuff, or they're flipping a light switch on and off, or they won't step on cracks. Okay, that's great. You only covered the compulsive part. Did you forget that OCD stands for obsessive compulsive disorder? All people associate with OCD is the compulsive behavior. They forget the obsessive thought, the intrusive thoughts, the unwanted thoughts. And it is difficult to explain to someone that OCD isn't just flipping a light switch on and off. It's thinking about that light switch for hours, even though you don't want it to. Like, someone is piping full volume earbud stream of consciousness into your ears to where you can't think straight because that thought is louder. 3 hours after you leave your house, you're thinking about the light switch. Yes, I think that my OCD played a big part, because if there was something that I perceived as negative, my brain would go, ooh, we can run with this. And then it would just play on repeat for hours, and I couldn't escape it. No matter what I tried to think, the negative thought was louder. And it took a long time to train my brain to identify negative thoughts before they got too loud and interrupt them.
That's so huge. And I'm so glad. I'm really passionate about explaining what OCD is too, because you're so right. Lots of people do just get stuck on the whole compulsion part because that's what they can see, right? And then there's this whole other side of OCD where I think they call it pure OCD, not that it matters, but when the compulsion is all mental. So people can't even see that form of OCD. But yeah, there's so much truth in that, man. One of the most powerful things when I was really beginning to dive into and learning that I have OCD and figuring out what that means, I was listening to a podcast. I've actually said this a few times on my show, and I don't remember the name of the show or the person who was on it. Really wish I did, to give him credit. But he was saying, he's like, you know, your body poops, but you don't think you're poop. And I'm just like, what the heck's he doing? Where is he going? Then he said, your mind produces thoughts, But just because your mind produces thoughts doesn't mean that you are your thoughts. And I was like,
I'm going to steal that.
Dude, do it. I love it. It was so, so simple. And I walked away being like, okay, all the things that terrify me, all the ways that I question myself as a person and my morality, all these things, they don't define me. I can breathe. And of course, it's not this simple, but I can breathe and practice letting them go.
I love that. You don't think you're poop.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean? <That's so good. laughs> I love that. What a genius.
Oh, I know. Seriously, man. So good. So good. So I appreciate you sharing that. So again, thank you for hitting on what OCD really is. But yeah, it's so interesting that that's like this added, I think a lot of people get stuck on this negative thought pattern. And then the OCD is an added step or an added barrier to getting to that positive thought pattern. And, you know, I want to hear a little bit more about your journey of what has it taken for probably a lot of things, but what has it taken for you to get to this point of being able to see the world in a more positive light than perhaps when you were a younger person?
I don't want to sound convicting to anybody listening who's not experiencing this. So this is just in my perspective. What I had to do, this is going to sound so bad.
Send it,
what
man.
What I had to do was realize that I wasn't the only person in the universe. Like I was aware of other people, but my problems were bigger than other people's. Like my whole, dude, OCD, all OCD is your brain telling you that your problems are bigger. I don't care how they want the books to be aligned. I need the books aligned this way. And it is a lot more, it gets a lot more severe than that, but I'm just using that as an example. Everything that happened in my life was about how I felt about it, how I needed things to be. And it was so self-centered. And I didn't understand that other people had needs that were just as pronounced as mine until I really started seeing the way that my behavior was affecting other people. If I would lose my temper and raise my voice and punch something or break something, and I would see someone that I loved cry because they saw that, I would get goosebumps. I was like, whoa, wait, what is, I didn't want to have a negative impact on you. You're one of my people. What happened? And just realizing that they experienced distress to that extent, I was like, it kind of snapped me awake and made me realize, oh, I'm not the only person who's hurting right now. I'm not the only person who's frustrated and who feels like their life isn't going the right way or whatever. Once you realize that other people have problems, and I think that a lot of people know that consciously. I think they know it subconsciously, but I don't know that they're really truly consciously aware of the fact that someone else's problem is just as big to them as your big problem is to you. Once you develop that sense of understanding, your priorities shift. You go, well, how the heck do I continue making everything about me and the way I want things when I know that other people are hurting and feeling the way that I feel right now? And it sort of helps you find your lane.
Man, that's big. That's really big. And I think a lot of times when it comes to changes in perspective or when we're trying to grow as people, especially in the way that you just described, there can almost be like a couple different phases too, right? Like where people to what you said, subconsciously understand that, you know, people are out there, they have issues too, just as big as mine, if not bigger. But then it gets to that point, hopefully, of consciously being aware of that, of the world doesn't revolve around you and that there's other people with other problems out there for real. And then there's like the next step of where it's like your heart starts to understand it and it actually starts to like live in you and you need to attend to it. And I think with the work that you do, it's clearly where you're at. And to go along with that, I want to talk about what led you to actually starting Cope Notes? Because now people know what it is. They know a little bit of your background, but what's the story with how the whole thing got started?
So a few things. First of all, I think of myself as a unique person. However, my desire to build a solution for a problem that I faced is not unique. Every entrepreneur sets out to solve a problem that they experience, or 99% of them anyway. And it was the same was true for me. So I faced two major problems. The first one was I was never really sick enough to qualify for people to give a crap. Right? Like if I was having a relapse and I was hallucinating and being violent and loud, then people care. But then if I start getting my stuff together a little bit, I shave, I iron my shirt, I start going to my classes, then people are like, oh, he's fine. And then I don't get support. So it's like, what? I'm not severe enough to qualify for support? Like, what the heck? You think that because I made an attempt on my life 3 weeks ago, but now I'm eating meals again, that everything's just friggin' back to normal? So it felt weird it felt weird to not be eligible for support. Like there's tons of crisis resources, but what if I'm not in crisis? What if I need support today, but I'm not going to take my own life? What about that? Like, what is there for people like me? And then the second thing that I faced was most people said, oh yeah, why don't you sit down with a therapist? Or why don't you do this? Why don't you watch this webinar or something? And the whole approach was stuff like that. Now, granted, I was in therapy for over 10 years. I am not talking down on therapy, but I am saying that individually, as a person, I didn't like the idea of doing one big thing every week or every 2 weeks. Because then it's like, what about the 6.5 days in between? I'm just supposed to wing it and be on my own, and then I'll have some support for 1 hour. I always say it like this. Imagine if once a week you ate 3 pounds of green beans and then you just ate whatever you wanted for the rest. You didn't have to eat any vegetables for the rest of the week. You'd friggin' die in like 7 weeks. You would die. You'd like poop your brains out and die. And I really feel like that's what we do with mental health. We go, oh, why don't you take like all of your years of trauma and issues and feelings? Why don't you take all of that and just kind of cram it into this one little session with somebody for 1 hour out of like several hundred hours in your week? And that ought to fix it. Like, I'm the kind of person who would rather do a little bit of something every day than one gigantic, seemingly impossible thing every once in a while. And that is the whole approach of Cope Notes. It's like, what if instead of storing up all your mental health stuff and trying to dump it all at once, what if you incorporated mental health and self-care into your lifestyle? So it didn't feel like such a big lift. It felt natural and comfortable and like a part of your daily routine.
Wow. I love that, man. I think that you make a great point about the vast majority of entrepreneurs solving an issue for themselves. And I think that's so relatable and can carry over to so many different metaphors, right? Like working out. If you work out, you run a marathon once a week and then you don't do anything else for the rest of the week, you're going to feel like shit, like all the time, you know? I think that's so big. I love that. So you launched it 3 years ago. And you said earlier that there have been, you know, there's literally people's lives who are changing from it. People's brains are literally changing. Had you gotten to the point where your brain had learned these positive thought patterns before? It's an ongoing practice, but before you launched it, or have you used it yourself too to really help with what your thought patterns are?
I use Cope Notes every day.
No way.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Love it.
And I never know what text I'm going to get either, because everyone gets a different text at a different time. Like no two people ever get the same text at the same time. It's completely differentiated. Everybody has their own unique text sequence. So I never know when I'm going to get my text or what it will say, how it will apply to my life. So it's just as surprising for me as anybody else. And I think that it's a conscious, you have to purposely stay on it. But the reason why I wanted to create Cope Notes is when I was doing it myself, when I was trying to like leave notes for myself and trying to do like a conscious practice of like staying consistent with mental health and self-care and reframing my thoughts. The problem was I would get really good for a few days and then I would lose motivation and I wouldn't do it for a couple of days. And then I would pick it back up and then, oh, well, it's my buddy's birthday, so I shouldn't worry about it today. And then, you know, you always have an excuse not to, especially on tour. There's no consistency. So I would go like 4 or 5 days without doing anything related to self-care, brain training. I'm like, dang. And then I would think I suck. And then I would get negative and then not do it for longer. And I realized that brains, the human brain is naturally, it is consistent in some ways and inconsistent in other ways. I think when it comes to teaching a traditionally negative brain to be positive, the brain can be fairly inconsistent because it keeps trying to go back to that old pattern. So I wanted to create a tool that could provide and guarantee consistency. Because if you give me a book and say, read a page a day, I'll read a page today, I'll read a page tomorrow, I'll read 13 pages on Saturday, I'll read no pages for like 7 weeks, you know, just because life happens. But if you somehow created a system to where that page of the book could find me every day to make sure that I never went a full 24 hours without it, I would be a changed man. And that's the goal of Cope Notes.
Wow. That's so good. That's so good. I love it. It's so logical. And yet, like, how often do we naturally, to what you were just saying, just almost find ways to not take care of ourselves, to not do the things that we know we need to be doing, you know?
Shots fired. You got me.
Dude. Me too, man. All the time.
I'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'm like sitting here and I was thinking to myself before we were recording, I'm like, okay, I got to go to the gym. I got to go to the gym after this interview. But then my little sister was like, hey, I live with my younger sister. And she was like, are you going to go to the gym today? I was like, oh, I'm supposed to, but I'm really tired. Like, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't, but like, I know I need to, you know, I know that I should. So it's like, we'll find every excuse in the book to not go. And I guess good news is now that I told you that, I kind of have to go now.
The comfort that I want to provide for people listening is like your body does adapt to things, but it requires consistency. So if you drink, I mean, picture it this way. If you drink a glass of water every morning when you wake up for 3 days, probably nothing's going to happen. If you have a glass of water, you know, a few days a week for 7 years, when you wake up, probably nothing's going to happen. If you have a glass of water every single day when you wake up for 9 months, the next day you wake up, you're going to be thirsty in the morning. Your body will communicate to you, hey, where's that thing? I want that thing. Remember, we were doing that thing. And you can do that with positive thought. You can set an expectation within your mind that can signal to you, hey, buddy, you're being negative. What happened to the positive thing? Hey, you're obsessing a lot on that thought, or you're being really harsh on your appearance, when really you have no control over the aspect of your appearance that you're being harsh about. Or hey, you're being really negative about your future, but you don't know what that's going to look like. Like, let's zoom out and get a little reasonable here. My brain has stopped me from doing that because of Cope Notes. Like, your brain starts calling you out and be like, come on, that's not you. Those thoughts aren't you. Like, you have an accountability buddy inside of your own head.
Accountability buddy. I love that. That's so good. Man, I love that. It's so, you're just full of wisdom, man. And you look super young. Are you still like in your 20s, early 30s? How old are you?
I am 28.
28. And you're full of wisdom, man. I
appreciate it.
Absolutely. I so appreciate you coming on this show, man. And you've just shared So many good things, so many good takeaways for people and they can also walk away and go sign up for Cope Notes too, which is awesome and will help them to train their brains for positive mental thoughts, which is great. Before I end any podcast, I have three questions that I like to ask everybody. I'm actually rephrasing the first one. If you're ready for it, I'm down to get into it.
Let's rock. Let's rock today.
I love it.
School of Rock.
Hey, that's right. Yeah, so good. I love it. Normally what I ask people is if you could define vulnerability in your own words, how would you do so? But I kind of want to switch it up and ask you, what is vulnerability to you?
It's not trying. You know, I had a girlfriend years ago who had this tattoo on her arm that said, don't try. And I never understood it. I was like, that's so negative. Like, why would you get, don't try? What are you talking about? Like, try your heart out. You got to put your heart and soul into it. And the more I got to know her, the more I realized it was like, part of it was like a do or do not, don't try. But part of it was like, you know, if you're having to bend over backwards for something and it's not feeding you, like, don't just spin your wheels. And I think being vulnerable is being like, well, I'm not going to try to be somebody. I'm just going to be who I naturally am. Saves you so much work.
Amen. So good. Johnny, number two is let me start over. For people listening to this, if they were to walk away with one takeaway, one message of hope, anecdote, whatever word you want to use there, what would that be?
See, I would want to say, I love you, but I think that people brush that off. So I want to say something that people don't hear as often. I like you. I think, like we were talking about, most people aren't vulnerable or authentic. They're not themselves because they don't like themselves. And it's like, well, how about I get us started? I think you're friggin' great. So stop trying to be someone who I don't think is as great as you are.
Heck yeah, man. I love that. I love that. It's so good. So many people need to hear that. All right. Last question. Totally different topic. I am a huge food guy. And I want to know what every single person's favorite food is that comes on my show. So what's your favorite food, man?
It's a tie because I'm a child. It's between pizza and cereal.
All right.
If it's hot outside, I'm having cereal. If it's cold outside, I'm having pizza.
I love it. Both really good foods. Now, which cereal are we talking about? Any of them? Do you have a favorite?
I am a connoisseur of sorts. I will say that earlier today, I was in the mood for Honeycomb, which is a staple in my household. But also, I will recommend, if there are any cereal fiends listening, the Nutter Butter cereal is so good.
I didn't know that existed.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Trust me.
All right. I'm going to have to pick it up. I love it. Johnny, seriously, thank you so much, man. This has been an absolute blast having you on. And I want people to know where they can find out more about you, your band Prison, Cope Notes, all that good stuff. So, you know, one time, actually, when you were interviewing Kristen at the end of the show, you said, shamelessly plug where people can find you. And I've taken that from you. I hope you know. Heck, so please, shamelessly plug where people can find your stuff.
So if you go to copenotes.com, you will find 99% of what you need. We have, obviously, our subscriptions are on there. And if you think you're too cool or too smart or you're invincible and you don't need Cope Notes, you can give a subscription to a friend or family member. So please go to the website and check it out. But also on that website, there's a link to our podcast. There is my TED Talk is on our About page. There is a contact form on the website if you need to get in touch with me directly. You get the most bang for buck on the Cope Notes website. And I would say, if you want to hear Prison, you can go to Spotify or Apple Music or whatever you listen to music on. The band is called Prison, and we have a record called Still Alive that I encourage you to listen to. And if you're a social media type of person, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, and I don't believe in Twitter, and on Instagram, My handle is at Johnny Crowder Loves You because I do.
So good, man. I love it. People go and check him out. Hey, man, I seriously appreciate you so much. Thank you for all the work that you do. You rock, literally. And I'm that was so cheesy. I'm just so grateful for you, man. This has been a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me, dude.
Absolutely. You take care, man. Thank you so, so much for listening to the show. I really, really hope that you enjoyed my time with Johnny. I know that I did. He's the man. He's got such an inspiring, just such a cool story. He's been through so much, and he's just a man of love. You know, he uses his heart to help other people on the daily, every single day. So he's an inspiring dude. I appreciate him so much. I appreciated having him on. Definitely check out all the cool stuff he's doing. Maybe Cope Notes is something that could really help you with your positive psychology. So give Cope Notes a shot. And with all that said, if you think that this show would help somebody, as always, please share it with them. Share this on social media and be sure to subscribe so that you're kept up to date whenever a new episode launches. And, you know, if you are feeling like leaving a review, if you want to give me some feedback, I would love an honest review of this show on Apple Podcasts. And as always, there's a link right in the show notes. It's super easy to get to in order to leave a review. Those mean the world to me. I love getting feedback and trying to figure out ways to make the content that I produce on this show better for you. So leave a review, share this, subscribe, all that good stuff. And remember, I appreciate you all so much. You are all incredible. You're enough right as you are right now. And I hope that you all have an amazing freaking day, whatever day it is. You all take care.